I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. More than 30 years ago, or so the poem tells us, two of the world's finest poets were walking the streets of Valparaiso on the Chilean coast. Pablo Neruda was playing host to the Russian poet Yevgeny Yevtushenko. An interesting pair, these two, both flourished as dissident poets, both dabbled in politics, and both have had the physical power of their words compared to those of Walt Whitman. But back to Valparaiso. The two are walking along, and Neruda points to the statue of a poet who had fallen out of favor, the statue relocated to a less attractive spot. "A poet," says Neruda, "is beyond the rise and fall of values. It's not hard to remove us from the center, but the spot where they set us down becomes the center." Now, those are lines from a poem written by the Russian poet Yevgeny Yevtushenko, written the year that Pablo Neruda died. This next hour we will spend with Mr. Yevtushenko, a man who, in his time, could draw 30,000 people to a reading of his poetry at Mayakovsky Ploshad in the center of Moscow. And we'd like to have you, our listeners, join in the conversation. What is the power of poetry in politics today? It was for years the poets who stood up to the dictators and their bureaucrats. So where are the poets today? Well, I can tell you where Yevgeny Yevtushenko is. The spot where he has set himself down, the place that has become his center, is Tulsa, Oklahoma. He's joining us from a studio there. Mr. Yevtushenko, it's nice to have you on The Connection.
I have the contemporary version of this soccer. I have special strategy. It's, they call it double center. So I share my time between Oklahoma and Russia. And I just, last year, I crossed all giant spaces of my motherland, all Siberia. I've been till Sakhalin Island and far east. I made it's kind of probably 40 or 50 readings of poetry. And it's not true that people forgot poetry. People just getting tired. What happened in the Soviet Union, now it's Russia. Everything was much more difficult. Transitional period, continuous.
Tell me about your recent trip. You were reading poetry in some of the most distant places of Siberia. Were people coming from all around the town to listen to you read?
Yes, mines, villages, giant factories. And even I was born in a little junction, Zima Junction, which means winter in Russian. And they, countrymen, they opened wonderful museum. They restored house when I was born. And they opened beautiful museum of poetry. And we had international poetry reading with some guests from France, from Nicaragua. It was even one very rebellious American poet, McNeese. I got him from the competition of slam poetry competition.
So tell me what has changed from the time that you were first in those towns of Siberia to what you saw when you went back this time? We know about all the political turmoil in Moscow, but I want you to take us away from the center, as they call it in Russia. I want you to take me out to the countryside. Are the people the same? Are the people sad with the changes that they have? What did you hear? What did you see?
It's difficult to say, because I couldn't say. Everybody asked me questions. Is it life in Russia now is better than before or worse? And it's very difficult to find answer, because the worst and the good goes together. It's like during avalanche from the mountains, everything, goes together. And beautiful shining snow and some pieces of furious rocks. and garbage and everything. In the same time, it's very dangerous. You have to know how to survive in such a, during such a outrageous avalanche. So, and what I could say, it's difficult now for intellectuals. It's because our readers, best readers of poetry, of literature, they are not very rich, and their salary are very low. And I mean, best readers of poetry and literature in Russia traditionally were engineers. You don't call engineers in America intellectuals, but we do. We think it's a greatest part of Russian intelligentsia. So some of them, their salary pretty low. In Yeltsin's time, they were not getting salary even for 6 months or sometimes even for 1 year, even more in some places. It was a criminal underestimation of our own people. And once I was shocked in Moscow when on the Pushkin Square I met at the doors of a casino one famous nuclear physicist. And he was telling, and he was wearing uniform of doorman. And he said me what he's making. He was a laureate of the state prize. And he said that he makes during over weekend twice more money than for full months working in his institute. Unfortunately, we have disproportion now of the salaries between businessmen and just intellectuals, especially very low salary.
You will know from living in the United States that there are many people in this country who think that that gap is happening here as well. I want to just make a mention to our listeners here. The telephone number, if you would like to join my conversation this hour with Yevgeny Yevtushenko, is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Mr. Yevtushenko, I wonder if I could ask you to read a poem for us. You had graciously sent a couple to us by fax. Do you have the one, The Lesser Evil, there with
yes,
you?
Yes, I have it in my hands.
Can I ask you to read
it's
that?
It's a new one. I mean, it's a very poem which I, you know, that now we in Russia, in America, we both our great countries, we face new elections. And so sometimes we are trying, some people is trying to justify that they choose lesser evil in America or in Russia. So I wrote a poem about it in the form of my letter to one wonderful Russian female poet, and she's a teacher too. The lesser evil, a beauty, a mother, a teacher, a poet. The colors of your homemade gems are irresistibly seductive, but angry tears are hiding inside. Since birth, you have not found happiness, but has Russia found happiness since her birth? You are Russian. You are one of Russia's. You are gifted beyond of comprehension, but do not squeeze out of your school children and of yourself the belief in crucifixion with nailed in defenselessly tired hands. You embittered. Your glance and even your red bangs have almost petrified. You say, I want to pick lesser of two evils, not chaos, but a strong hand. Again, we have been turned into fools, caught like a fish on a hook made from Stalin's steel, nostalgically swallowing it with pleasure. But strong hands can break any door during midnight arrest. Today in the East, tomorrow, who knows, in the West. Oh, my maiden, my Russia, have a faith in your strong soul, and in strong hands only after. Strong hand could be hand of a crook, of a villain. Sometimes I sigh bitterly. I just simply wish to see more decent people, and this will be the most decent order. Even the lesser shame is still a shame. There is no boundary between lesser vulgar and vulgar. You can't choose the lesser of two evils. The lesser one would evolve into the greater one. Again, we choose one disaster over another. We are like chickens in the vicious chalk-sketched circle. God, how childishly we choose the lesser evil. But maybe somewhere there exists something glistening unexpectedly third. So I see, as you see, I didn't finish it with an exclamation point. I finished it with a question.
You are because an actor as well as a writer, are you not?
Thank you. I'm sorry for my inevitably Siberian accent.
I'd love to listen to you read. I should remind our listeners that that my guest this hour, Yevgeny Yevtushenko, was writing poetry over 50 years ago, was performing it at public festivals in Moscow in the 1950s, in the 1960s, and the 1970s. And this poem, The Lesser Evil, was written just last month. I want to go back, if I can, just to two lines. I just simply wish to see more decent people, and this will be the most decent order. You're speaking about not just Russia. You're speaking about
all humanity. I think that all problems today are the global problem. For instance, the main problem between young people now on the old surface of our globe, this is apathy. That's true. You know, when I came to the United States in 1960, from country which was in full stagnation. Soviet Union was already in stagnation that time. And I was so inspired by stormy social life in United States. Intellectuals were writing very courageous works. They were demonstrating against all injustices. Now people is getting tired in Russia too. And this apathy is a very dangerous thing. I always saying my students, please do not be skirmish to politics.
Mr. Yevtushenko, let me stop you right there. We need to take a very short break. A reminder to Connection listeners, there is a challenge for you from Yevgeny Yevtushenko. Why is there so much apathy in the arts? Why are the writers not challenging the politicians and the bureaucrats, not only in Russia but in this country, the way they did 30, 40 years ago? 1-800-423-8255. That's our number. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. My guest this hour, Yevgeny Yevtushenko. He was the first Russian poet first poet from the Soviet Union to read in the West. His poem, Baba Yar, written in 1961, was the very first public attention called to anti-Semitism and the killing of so many Jews in the ravine outside Kiev in the Ukraine, and was considered one of the most powerful poems of the year. Yevgeny Yevtushenko is a distinguished writer at the University of Tulsa. He's joining us from KWGS in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I want to I know you teach now, and I have, of course, not had the pleasure of sitting in one of your classrooms, Mr. Yevtushenko, but I can imagine that you use your classrooms as a place to try and inspire young people today.
Yes, of course. And you know, I'm absolutely sure that they are longing for ideals. Many of them, they have, for instance, they are good guys. But when I ask in my questionnaire, new my students, most of them are fresh men. Who are your heroes? Mostly they don't name any political contemporary figures in the world. Most of them, they say, my mom, my dad, my family, my beloved. Sometimes even they say names of their beloved. It's wonderful. Sometimes they named Jesus Christ. Some of them, I mean, have different opinions, name Che Guevara. Some very deep, but not political figures. You know, I think what we need now, that I feel by intuition, we need, especially after the death of my very close friend, one of the great scientists, professors, and great philosopher, Carl Sagan. He, you know, after his loss, I feel gap in America, because he was trying to connect sciences with the philosophy, and probably this is way, and probably some, we need new kind of politicians, people who is very well educated, people who knows literature, who knows foreign languages, who doesn't speak through interpreters with their guests, foreign guests, and people who knows science. They have to be very many-sided, you know. I mean, new. That's why I always inspire my students to join politics, not to avoid them. Otherwise, you couldn't change politics. And we need development of philosophy. If you could ask me, in my opinion, all countries now, I mean we, humanity, we need development of philosophy more even or not less than the development of technology. Because this gives us meaning of life, even why we are forging our ideals with our own hands when we are looking to the horizon, because we couldn't live just losing horizon. We have to think not only about tomorrow, but after and after tomorrows.
Yes, but then, Yevtushenko, we have a number of people who want to speak to you on the telephone. I'm going to go.
Yes, with a pleasure.
Yeah, to our first call from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and Maurice is calling in. Maurice, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm thrilled to be able to talk with Mr. Yevtushenko. Sir, you were one of my heroes in the 60s when I was in school, and you published your poem, Baba Yar, which was very, very important in my education and my knowledge and my involvement in finding out exactly what happened in the Holocaust. And as you remember, in those years, not too much was known. There weren't too many books. The trial of Eichmann had occurred in 61, which was really the first public discussion of the details of what had happened. But it had always puzzled me that it took a non-Jew such as yourself to bring out, to write something like this. And I just wondered how you got involved in that particular incident and what inspired you to write this this poem.
You know, sir, first of all, I always mostly write my poetry out of two feelings, out of feeling of shame or out of feeling of love, tenderness. And when I knew about the existence of Baba Yar, I was not the first poet who wrote it, poem. And when I came, some Russian poets who entered to the city of Kiev with the Red Army in 1945, and they discovered this incredible, terrible massacre, they wrote some good poetry. But afterwards, I understood there is a conspiracy of the silence around Baba Yar. I didn't understand why. And when I came in the place, in the city of Kiev, instead to see one monument dedicated to these numerous victims, I thus see a lot of mountains of garbage. They transform, and many bulldozers or trucks carrying garbage from all the city.
Mr. Yevtushenko,
I was so ashamed.
Let me just interrupt for those who aren't familiar. Baba Yar translates, I believe, to Ravine of the Woman, and it is a place outside Kiev where thousands upon thousands of Ukrainian Jews were taken and shot. And their bodies left to rot in the ravine that was done by the Germans. It was also done, if I'm not mistaken, with collaborators from both the Russian and the Ukrainian army.
Yeah, it was, yes, Ukrainian police who collaborated with Germans. Yes.
And
that's why it was one of the explanation why they didn't want to talk it, why they were trying to hide it. Another motivation was because Stalin's ideologists, they were already preparing new wave of anti-Semitism when they killed, by personal instruction of Stalin, the greatest Jewish actor, Michoels, who was a chairman of anti-fascist committee.
I wonder if I can go back to Maurice's question, because I think it's a fascinating way of understanding what was going on at that time. You had, by 1961, become a very famous poet in the Soviet Union. And that gave you a little bit of standing in that country. It meant that you weren't an easy man for them to lock away. I mean, they would have trouble with Solzhenitsyn. They would have trouble with the Sakharovs. They would have trouble with anybody who had a profile. And they were, I won't say afraid of you, but you had that little bit of extra power to write and to speak. And is that why you, as a Christian, and this is Maurice Quest, is that why you could get away with publishing this poem when perhaps someone else might not have been able to do it?
No. You know, it was of course, at that time, only a member of Communist Party could be editor-in-chief of any newspaper. But some of communist, idealist communist people, especially people who was fighting against Nazis, they were very good people, and I never permit to myself to insult them. It was like my mother who was singing in front as a singer. And so I knew that Kasalapov is an honest man. It was editor-in-chief of Literaturnaya Gazeta. When he has read the poetry, this my poem, he said, okay, I have to call my wife. It has to be family decision. I asked him why. He said, because I will be fired tomorrow. And his wife came. She was a very mighty woman with giant shoulders, like wrestler. She was a nurse during Second World War and saved many wounded soldiers and officers. And they came both, and she had a little bit wet eyes, and she said, don't worry, Zhenya. She was seeing how nervous I've been waiting for the decision. Don't worry, she said. We decided to be fired. And I could say this, I was very proud of Russian people, that so many Russian people and people of other nationalities of Soviet Union supported me. I got during 1 month probably about 10,000 letters or telegrams, and even basketball team of our university, they during 1 month they were as my bodyguards, volunteers.
I want to go back to our phone lines. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Yevgeny Yevtushenko is my guest this hour, and to Sandra, who's calling in from Boston. Sandra, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Well, first of all, I just want to express my admiration for your guest. And all he's been through, and just the fact that he has, you know, a chance to be political and a chance to really try to change the world, which I think is an important aspect for all artists to consider. My comment and my question to both of you is, what do you do when you're a musician, as is my case, and you're trying so hard to get your music heard and to get your voice heard and to become a better musician and to become a better person, and the world around you doesn't understand that, and you're just trying every day to earn the bread and to get your work done, and you want to have a political voice, but you just can't because you're just trying to, you know, get all these things done and just simply live as a person and live as an artist. What do you do then? How can you reconcile these two lives?
It's a great, great question, Sandra, because Yevgeny, you were saying that this is in fact the problem that you see in Russia today, that the artists don't have the profile that they used to have.
Yes. So I could tell you one thing, I became famous not before Babi Yar, and I became famous widely, nationally famous with my poetry of love, not with political poetry. I just began to write political poetry later, after Pasternak's death, because when I met him and he blessed me, Pasternak never been political poet, but to have a conscience, it also was a political position that times and always it is political position if writers even refuse it.
But let me interrupt you for a moment here. Pasternak wrote Dr. Zhivago in 1957. He was offered the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1958, and the state discouraged him from accepting it. But that was a love story. That wasn't a political story.
You are absolutely right, but Pasternak broke taboo because Pasternak was not describing civil war. He was not taking sides. He didn't hate neither the Reds or nor the so-called White Guards. He had a feeling of deep pity for a common fratricide, which was civil war. That's why, and he put this story of love between Lara and Yuri Zhivago as a more important story than history itself. And this is, so he put human values over the so-called class struggle. And Gorbachev, it was heresy in that time. He was the first man who said it, you know, openly as an artist, metaphorically. And Gorbachev, when began Perestroika, he already repeated this Pasternak's philosophy as a new doctrine of Perestroika, but after many years, after 20 years.
1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, your chance to join my conversation this hour with Yevgeny Yevtushenko. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Next to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and where are we going here? With Andrew's on the line. Andrew.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Mr. Yevtushenko. I've read your works in translation, but my question, Mr. Gordon, you're portraying Mr. Yevtushenko in a role of heroic defiance, but some Russians see Mr. Yevtushenko, and especially in his official appointments, as someone who was sort of a collaborationist and may have betrayed some of the other artists who truly were.
Andrew, you're on the line with Mr. Yevtushenko now. Speak directly with him.
For instance, sir, could you be more specific? For instance, give me an example.
Yes, Mr. Joseph Brodsky, for example. I understand that at some point you and he had a run-in on the streets of New York, and that he resigned from one of the American Society of Letters or Society of Poetry as a result of you being inducted, or maybe he refused to be inducted himself because of that. And
Okay, sir, I got your question. I could tell you something. May I answer you? Sir, you don't know this story very well. Many Russians are very different. And Brodsky was completely different poet. First of all, I never been enemy of socialism. Never. Never. I've never been member of Communist Party. I never belonged to Russian bureaucracy. But I think that the best combination in the future could be, as according the idea of Mr. Sakharov, our great nuclear scientist, is a combination of best features of capitalism with best features of idea of socialism. I'm still convinced in it. Minus crimes of socialism or crimes of capitalism and stupidities of capitalism and stupidities of socialism. We need something third, something another system which never will be perfect because we human beings are not perfect. About Brodsky. Brodsky was all Russians who know history very well, not from who knows it from horse mouth, from documents. They know that Brodsky was released from exile because of my letter defending him. And I was met him in Moscow in first day of his presence. He had with him very close, friendly relationship. But, you know, we were absolutely different poets. I like Renaissance poetry. He was, how to say, he was born pessimist. His poetry is a different, and his character different. So we had just different views on the life. When he left from Russia, he did it because he was not expelled like Solzhenitsyn. He was many times trying to leave Russia. He was writing different kind of letters. And when he left Russia, he began to say, despite I helped him to get his first work at the Queen's College through my friend, distinguished professor Albert Tond. And it's many people who know this story very well, not like you, by some rumors and gossips. And so Brodsky was elected as a member of American Academy. Only one Russian he was at that time, member of American Academy. When other distinguished American writers, they offered my name as a member of American Academy, he disliked it. He wanted to be alone.
Mr. Yevtushenko, he wrote
a letter against me. That's all.
I have to stop you there. We have to take a short break. Connection listeners, welcome to the world of Russian arts, a place to envy because the people who live there take their work so seriously. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join my conversation this hour with Yevgeny Yevtushenko. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This hour, my guest is the Russian poet Yevgeny Yevtushenko. And it would probably be a good time to ask you, Mr. Yevtushenko, if you'd read another one of your later poems.
Newest poems,
yeah.
Yes.
Would you do
Thank
that for
you.
Us?
I appreciate it. This one condition. Condition, okay?
Okay. Well,
as,
tell me what
as
the condition
you say
is.
In America, first. I'll scratch your back, you'll scratch mine.
Okay, well, what
so
do I have to do?
Yes, I will ask your kind permission because we are talking only about politics. Just for 1 minute and 20 seconds of one lyrical piece, okay?
So we read
afterwards.
A poem, and then we're going to hear...
Yes, after this one. Because this, I'll give you to our wonderful listeners to listen how Russian poets recite poetry, little poem about love written in English and with American jazz of Paul Winter.
No, хорошо, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so roadmap, it's a new poem. I'm much multiplied, but in reality I'm completely alone. I'm inhuman, but I call myself a human being. I'm phoning myself in a kind of craziness, but I look on the caller ID. Who is calling me? I crumpled. I hope that you understand that I write not on my own name. I crumpled skyscrapers in Manhattan into rubble and the Soviet Union into smithereens. I atomized myself by explosives in Israel and Palestine. I am confront tantalizing myself for oil, diamonds, gold, and the holes in the bagels. I've lost my rod, but I panhandled you like salvation for my own road map. I defile myself in dead end streets, with my brains fogged up by booze and dope. I decapitated with a medieval dagger my own head in Chechnya. I'm convulsing, queued up to myself to obtain the bloody, notorious green card. I condemned my legless or handless life because I wasn't unhappily killed in the war. I pushed by force into the voting booth like a bull into mousetrap, slipped my ballot into the cunning slot, voting for myself. Whom else? While I protest, my nogging stupidly invites a rubber club against myself. I poisoned myself with smoke. I contaminated myself with AIDS. Who robbed the Amazon, Alaska, the Urals? Unfortunately, it is not a secret to anyone. Everybody already knows that it was stolen by me from myself. The frost-bitten map, rustling in the crispy icy dust, is lying somewhere on the highest, highest mountain. On that mountain, we have not yet reached.
That's Yevgeny Yevtushenko. The name of that poem is Roadmap. Now, you have a love poem for us as well?
Yes, I'll read with Paul Winter Jazz. Please. Even if you are swimming alone, you are not really alone. Inside your veins, endlessly swim broken fragments of smells, pieces of almost forgotten feelings, smithereens of somebody's words, scraps of soundless sounds. Even if you are swimming alone, the water is swimming with you as well, caressing and blessing your tired body. Even if you are swimming alone, the fallen leaves swim with you, and the fallen angels swim with you, trying to wash their sins from their wet, heavy wings. Even if you are swimming alone, all your loves are swimming with you. There are ex-husbands and ex-wives, but there are no ex-loves. Even if you are swimming alone, you could be dragonfly on the foamy crest of the wave. Even if you are swimming alone, you could be double cloud which swims in two different skies, one above, one below. Even a lonely cloud cannot swim alone. And what is reflection
an instinctive creation of our twin.
1-800-423-8255. That's the number to join my conversation this hour with Yevgeny Yevtushenko. And we're going straight away to Columbia, South Carolina. Raphael is on the line. Raphael, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me on. I told the screener that 20-odd years ago when I got out of graduate school, I was fortunate enough to land my first job with an honors program. And I used in translation a great deal of Mr. Yevtushenko's work. Yuri Gavrilovich Yevtushenko, as I remember. And two things stand out in my mind that I've read of his, again in translation, even though Russian literature was one of my specialties. When the truth is replaced by silence, the silence is a lie. And that just strikes me to the core. And the other thing that I never quite get right, and I haven't been able to find my copy of lately, but he wrote words to the effect that it is a terrible time in which we live if common courtesy can look like courage. And I wish he would straighten out my translation of that, but I'd love to hear him speak to some of the circumstances about which those things were written.
Mr. Yevtushenko, a terrible time when common courtesy looks like courage. Is that an accurate translation of one of your lines?
It's not courtesy. Simple, when simple honesty looks as courage. That was real meaning of a poem. I don't remember how it was translated by a professional translator. When simple honesty looks, if someone is found just somebody's wallet, we congratulate him. Some local newspaper, they write about him article, congratulating, glorifying him. So sometimes we don't need it. I think probably we will live very soon in such a time when everybody will congratulate us if our trousers will be just zipped up, you know. Sorry for that. So I hope I didn't break your radio rules.
No, you're well within our radio rules. But I'm just thinking about the point that you made. You know, somebody will find a wallet on a park bench and return it to the police, and it will go back to the owner. And that kind of simple honesty is marked in our society today as a form of courage, as something that is unusual rather than the usual.
Unfortunately, I could say unfortunate. It has to be norm of behavior, you know. That's it. That's it, but not, it has to be. But we just forgetting that it's just normal behavior. It's not heroic action.
All right, I want to thank Raphael for that call. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Next to Boston, Massachusetts now, and Jay is with us. Jay, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you, and good morning to Mr. Yevtushenko. When I was in my very early 20s, in 1963, I was in Paris, and with some students, we went to hear you speak to an overflowing capacity audience. And it was just extraordinary reading about you and hearing you. You were a force of nature. I mean, it was just extraordinary. And it was the first time, really, I'd seen a poet as performer. And, I mean, one would have to, I don't know if people know what you really had, and probably you still have, but you're this tall, wonderful, charming, handsome, film star status sort of person. But the fact that you had a political conscience, too, it was the combination made students sort of swoon. But
Jay, just before I hand over to Yevgeny, can you put in your words what it was about Paris in 63 and how we look at that time and today, and whether or not a poet with the same force, the same sort of compelling presence, would draw the crowd anywhere in Russia or America or in Paris today?
I feel that there was far more optimism of every, certainly of me, but I think there's a lot more optimism in the West than pre-Vietnam War and all the other horrors that have happened. And I don't know. I very much doubt.
No, I think that's a great way of putting it. And I want Mr. Yevtushenko, more optimism in that time. What would you say?
Not only optimist. You know, I never been only optimist, because I understood that for many people to be semi-professional pessimist, it's just their way to look more intelligent than the others. Easiest way, cheapest way to look most intelligent than the others. And I didn't dislike it. I think writers, we have not to promote pessimism. We must not to play with death. We must not glorify drugs. We must not glorify suicide commitments, as some poets, unfortunately, they are doing it with their own lives. And I remember what Albert Camus once said, each wall is a door. Each wall, it means there is no situations when you could not find solution. And some people is getting pessimistic now. They are refused to participate in politics. I think it's wrong, because they are helping, not participating in politics and social life. They are helping the worst people. I divide all humanity for people with sparks in eyes and without sparks. But unfortunately, sometimes I see many good people with no sparks in eyes, and some bastards. I'm sorry if it's permitted to say such a kind.
You're getting close to the line here, but you're still within the margins.
So with the sparks of energy in there, and that's wrong. Good people who has inner energy to recreate the world, they have to have these sparks.
Mr. Yevtushenko, it has been a delight having you on the program today.
Thank you, sir.
Yevgeny Yevtushenko, Russian poet. The Connection is produced by Catherine Fenollosa, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Jen Mattson, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugertz. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.